So obviously, John had a much more eloquent sermon for us. And again, hopefully at some point we'll be able to hear those thoughts that God has placed on his heart. But turn to Acts 18. We heard from Aaron last week, or 2 weeks ago actually, about Paul and how Paul ended up finding in Corinth Priscilla, Aquila, finding friends. And he was there and he reasoned in the synagogue, and the one major thing that stood out in that sermon, I think maybe to all of us, but to me, from Aaron, was that God brings comfort. And there was a passage in there where the Lord came to Paul. And it was Acts 18, verse 9, and the Lord said to Paul one night in a vision, he said, "Do not be afraid, but go on speaking and do not be silent. For I am with you, and no one will attack you to harm you, for I have many in this city who are my people." And it was this reminder from God to Paul that he wasn't alone, that he wasn't isolated, he wasn't just one man trying to do the work of God in this foreign city, in this place where there was maybe some hostility, people against him. He wasn't by himself. God had actually placed other people there who understood and knew the truth. And so God is revealing to the people there in Corinth, not just through Paul, but through others, the way. As Acts commonly refers to, the way is the description of Christians. The word Christian really hasn't applied to people at this point. We'll see even in the next upcoming chapters in Acts 19 and Acts 20, where there are other people who have become familiar with the way. It is the way of Christ, the way of following Christ. And there's non-Christians, non-believers, non-followers of the way who have started taking notice and started paying attention. And one of the reasons for this is because the gospel is spreading, the truth is spreading. But for some, it's actually incomplete, and that's what we're going to see in this passage. So let's go ahead and start reading. We're going to start in verse 18. And this, so after this, after Paul spent a year and a half in Corinth, and he brought Priscilla and Aquila and had, you know, talked with some other people there, and they had grown the church, and you know, so on and so forth. After this, verse 18, Paul stayed many days longer and then took leave of the brothers and set sail for Syria. And with him, Priscilla and Aquila. So they came with him. They came with him. This is his new partners in ministry. At Cenchreae, he had cut his hair, for he was under a vow. And they came to Ephesus, and he left them there. So he left Priscilla and Aquila there in Ephesus as they traveled through. But then he himself went into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. When they asked him to stay for a longer period, he declined. But on taking leave of them, he said, "I will return to you if God wills." And he set sail from Ephesus. When he had landed at Caesarea, he went up and greeted the church, and then went down to Antioch. After spending some time there, he departed and went from one place to the next through the region of Galatia and Phrygia, strengthening all of the disciples. And so Paul has a clear call. He's to go and travel, and he spends his whole life doing this. And a lot of the book of Acts is documenting that travel and all those places. But one by one, we're introduced to new people. And we're going to see that right here in this next verse. Now a Jew named Apollos, a native of Alexandria, came to Ephesus. He was an eloquent man, competent in the scriptures. He had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and being fervent in spirit, he spoke and taught accurately the things concerning Jesus, though he knew only the baptism of John. And he began to speak boldly in the synagogue, but when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. And when he wished to cross to Achaia, the brothers encouraged him and wrote to the disciples to welcome him. When he arrived, he greatly helped those who through grace had believed, for he powerfully refuted the Jews in public, showing by the scriptures that the Christ was Jesus. So this is a new character that's been introduced to us, Apollos. He's from Alexandria. So Alexandria, that's a city that Alexander the Great had founded in North Egypt, is where he's from. There's a big library there. So I can only assume that Apollos is a man who is a man of education. He's learned a lot. He's learned from that Greek library. And he's a Jew, so he's schooled in the Jewish scriptures, and he understands the truth. And it says here that he's come to understand the way of Jesus. He's competent in scripture, so he has the Old Testament, the same Old Testament that we have. He has the prophecies. He's seen that this is true. This is the region that we're in. Cool. This is John's PowerPoint is way cooler than ones I make. That's pretty awesome. So there's Ephesus up there. You can see in Asia. And then Corinth is over there in what would be modern-day Greece above Crete there. So they've gone from Corinth over to Ephesus, and Paul is traveling on, but Priscilla and Aquila are left there in Ephesus. So down below here, yep, there we go. So that looks like that's Apollos. Wow, he's got animation in his. I got to get on the ball with this stuff, man. I'm going to use his little PowerPoint thing here. So let's see. I don't have access to it. I was going to point something out, but the mouse is somewhere else. That's fine. So you see Alexandria north of Egypt there, and then Apollos has traveled up, and he has decided to stay in Ephesus here, and he's preaching. But he's preaching a message that is a little bit incomplete. But he's a man of eloquence. He's got a lot of good words, and he taught accurately the things concerning Jesus, though he knows only the baptism of John. So he's kind of got Jesus' ministry up to a point, but he doesn't quite understand all of it. So Priscilla and Aquila obviously must have heard him as he's preaching, and they've experienced, you know, Paul's preaching, and they understand more fully the teachings of Jesus Christ. They've been taught that by Paul in Corinth for a couple of years. And now as they've traveled with Paul, they understand, hey, this man is, he's almost there. He's full of the Spirit. He's actually probably making converts at this point. But he's not fully there. And it, you know what this reminds me of is actually in the book of 1 Corinthians, where Paul writes back to Corinth. And he's talking about some division that's happening in Corinth. And it says, let's see, this is verse 11 in 1 Corinthians 1. It says, it's been reported to me by Chloe's people that there is quarreling among you, my brothers. And what I mean is that each one of you says, I follow Paul, or I follow Apollos. That's Apollos is the character that we've just been introduced to. That's where he pops up later as Paul is writing to the Corinthian church. Or I follow Cephas, or I follow Christ. And then he says, is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you, or were you baptized in the name of Paul? I thank God that I baptized none of you except Crispus and Gaius. He's probably referring to the year and a half that he spent there in Corinth that we learned about a couple weeks ago, where he had made a bunch of converts and he had baptized some of them. But he's saying, I thank God that I only baptized two of you so that no one may say you were baptized in my name. And then he has a little subtext. I did baptize also the household of Stephanas. Beyond that, I do not know whether I baptized anyone else. For Christ did not send me to baptize, but to preach the gospel, not with words of eloquent wisdom, lest the cross of Christ be emptied of its power. So at first glance, as I look at this, not having, you know, really dove in deep with it, but the first thing I see here is that Apollos and Apollos' eloquence, and maybe some of his preaching that was a little bit incomplete, he's developed a group of followers. And I think that Luke is pretty simple in his explanation. He just says he's eloquent. He's learned. He's an eloquent man. He's fervent. And then later on it says he powerfully refutes the Jews in public. He's got a following. And I think one thing is obvious. He's got enough humility to stop and listen to Priscilla and Aquila, who are obviously saying, hey, we know a little bit more here, Apollos. And he was willing to step in underneath their tutelage and learn a little bit more and understand more completely the way of Jesus. So he's a learned man. He's very eloquent. And simultaneously, he's humble enough to receive some input, right? But there seems like at some point later, there is a time where there's a whole group of people who are, instead of aligning with Jesus Christ as their sole leader and head and authority, they're divided. And they're listening to different men, or they're at least associating with the messages of different men. One is Paul, and another one is Cephas, and another one is this Apollos. And that's a temptation, I think, that we can fall into. Who are we going to follow? Who are we going to listen to? Who are we going to trust? Is it a pastor? Is it someone you see regularly on stage in front of you? You know, myself, John, Aaron, or Perry? Who am I going to follow? Is it a political leader? Is it maybe a political party? Maybe it's a certain podcaster. I'm trying to, you know, roll through my mind, what are my influences? What are the things that I allow myself to be led by or steeped by or educated by? I have a broad range of inputs that come into me. But we all follow. Sometimes we get on YouTube and we have a regular person that we're viewing, and they have maybe an agenda, and maybe it's something environmentally, maybe it's something to do with a family, maybe it's something to do with health or fitness, wellness, and they become influencers, and we're surrounded by those people, and we click on Instagram, and they're there in our feed every single day giving their advice for what we're supposed to do for the best life. And it's eloquent, and it's the video quality is amazing, and we follow. And we align ourselves. And what's happened here is that there are people aligning themselves with men when they should be aligning themselves with Jesus Christ. And isn't this just a glimpse in 1 Corinthians where we have these three different directions that people are facing instead of facing the true direction of Jesus Christ? Isn't this just so symptomatic of us now, thousands of years later, that we tend to say, I'm going to follow this path or this particular branch of church, and the church is splintered into a whole bunch of different directions and different emphasis. You know, one church says we're going to follow just the truth of the Bible, and they get real analytical and real intellectual, but they maybe fail to love their neighbors. They go, this is the way. And another church, they want to put these words into practice, and they really love their neighbors, and they serve, and they administer justice. But maybe they forget or downplay that the Bible says marriage should be between one man and one woman. And they neglect the truth, and they follow a way, a direction. Maybe it's the direction of a leader who's saying, no, this is the thing that matters. Instead of having a holistic, broad view of what Christ brought in his ministry, where he did bring the truth, and he brought the life, and he brought the way of the Spirit, and he brought even just simply caring for a widow or an orphan, giving a glass of cold water, he said, that's true ministry. But he brought the breadth and the depth of the scriptures, and he used them constantly in his life, and it's a well-rounded example. But we tend to follow personalities. And isn't it interesting today, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot, actually, and you're just going to kind of get my bent this morning rather than John's bent, as he probably would have preached an entirely different sermon out of this passage. But isn't it interesting today, as we look at politics, for instance, and as we look at the prescriptions for how we're supposed to think and live and the truths we're supposed to absorb, isn't it interesting today that everything from should you wear a mask to what do you think about riots, what do you think about the debate about race, how you feel about economics, and the ability of the government to just out of thin air create money and give it to people, how you think about how our healthcare is organized and run or paid for? Isn't it interesting that those things, Christians latch on to branches of those things and say, hey, we have to think this way. And it becomes incredibly binary. And it becomes a black and white this or that. And the church splinters and branches off. I've talked to other pastors in Fort Collins who've had their churches divided. I've actually been very grateful for our church because we haven't experienced a lot of that. We've been gracious with each other. We've been very, very, I think, grounded. as we follow Jesus. But we all have these tendencies, and we have these tendencies to kind of polarize. And then one of the crazy things about today is that you can have someone like Apollos, who's incredibly eloquent, and they can just, they don't have to own a newspaper to spread their information. They don't have to publish a book necessarily and have a big publisher backing them. They don't have to have a movie theater. Today's technology has changed everything so that someone like Apollos, who has a little bit of knowledge and is very, very eloquent, can stand up in front of a camera and publish to YouTube, Instagram. They can publish online and instantaneously gain a following. Whether they have credentials or experience or not, if they're eloquent enough, if their tech is, you know, good enough, they've got all the ring lights and the podcasting stuff and a good background, they become influencers, and they can kind of just say what they want, and people will follow them because they're eloquent, and they present a good argument. But it's just so amazing that today, every single one of us, as we, you know, we turn on our web browsers, we click on our phones, and we see our news feeds, we can be influenced by all these different people. And then we can splinter into different directions. And we can say, well, I'm following the no-mask crowd, or I'm following the you-must-wear-a-mask-all-the-time crowd. And we get split and we get divided. Those are just some examples. There's so many different examples. You know, we worship this way as Christians. We have to think about this for politics, because this person is saying it. And then there's misinformation, and then there's conspiracies, and you can dive deep into things that aren't true on both the right and the left politically. And it's hard to understand what is the truth. And I think that right now, truth as a commodity is very scarce. Understanding the way that we're supposed to live, understanding the facts of the matter, this is a scarce commodity. It's becoming scarcer and scarcer and scarcer. And we're all experiencing that influence. And as we sit down at, you know, the Thanksgiving table or the Christmas table with extended family, and we start getting into arguments with our close family members about something they read on the internet about a vaccine, for instance, whichever side you happen to be on, and you end up divided, you end up separating, you end up splitting, dividing. And I, you know, if I were to speak anything today, as I see the division that was possible from this moment with Apollos and Paul, eloquent speaker, one maybe that wasn't quite so eloquent, people following one direction or another. If I could speak anything today, it's that the church is called to be unified, not divided. It doesn't mean that we're supposed to necessarily all come to conformity of thought on everything. That's just not going to be possible. When I, you know, my wife and I disagree on some political things. My wife and I disagree on, you know, musical taste sometimes. I had some friends over the other night, and we obviously had some big disagreements on music as we were sitting down listening to music together. I tend to like more hard rock music. People tend to like more pop music, and those things aren't necessarily, you know, just we just have all these, we have lots of differences. And what is happening in our world today with all of the eloquence and the high-quality video, the ability to spin a story out of any video footage, you know, journalists using a lot of adjectives rather than nouns to describe the facts all around us, the world is communicating with eloquence and certainty things that are very, very uncertain. They're communicating, this is how it is, rather than this is how I think, or this is how I perceive it as my own individual opinion. This is how it is, and if you don't think this way, well, it's a binary system, and you have to bounce all the way to the opposite side. If you question this one or criticize this one, you are obviously all the way over here. Those are the things of division. Those are the things that cause division. And what Paul is exhorting in 1 Corinthians is he's saying, hey, you're saying I follow Paul. You say I follow Apollos. You say I follow Cephas. Is Christ divided? No. Christ has called us to be unified. And as I think about 2021, I think about all of the tension that we've experienced throughout 2020. I mean, that seriously, this is month 13 of 2020. This is the longest year ever. For a lot of pastors I've talked to, this year of one year length, I guess the year ends in March, right? Because that's when we actually formally shut everything down, third week of March, spring break. So third week of March, everything should be done, right? I don't know about that. I don't think that's going to be true. But I talk to pastors, and it's like this year has lasted 5 years in our experience and our levels of stress. And that stress comes from so much information being fed to people and people following certain paths and just getting freaked out in fear, and people getting divided, and families getting divided, and marriages being having tension, and children being opposed to their parents over things we should not divide over. Over things that people who are followers of Jesus Christ, people who have been freed from their sin by an act of complete mercy, undeserved, that death on the cross that bought us freedom. We should be the most gracious, most merciful, most understanding, most forgiving people on the planet, and yet Christians tend towards division. And Paul's highlighting it right here in 1 Corinthians. Right away, early on in church history, division is something you're going to be prone towards. And it may be rooted in following a certain person, following a certain message, a certain platform. And I can't think of any other time in the history of the world where we've had so many eloquent platforms to follow. You know, 15 years ago, if you wanted to follow a pastor of a church, pretty much the only way to do that was to subscribe to their tape ministry. 20 years ago, you'd get a cassette tape. 15 years ago, they'd mail you a CD. There wasn't this ability to hop on and see, you know, 10,000 sermons on a Sunday morning. We have that every single week. It's hard to know who to pay attention to. And they're all so eloquent. And as a pastor, it's intimidating. You know, when someone critiques our messages, which is good. I want to be critiqued. I want to learn. I want to grow. You know, oftentimes it's, you know, I'm being compared to Tim Keller or John Piper, these world-class guys who've risen to the top. And I'm like, I'm just never going to be that. But what I can be is locally under God's headship, filled with his spirit, with a group of people that I and three other men have been called towards to draw a circle around and say, this is my flock. And we're just going to do everything we can and to the point of dying for this flock because we love them and God's given them to us and us to them. And it's a clear line. And I'm not trying to get my message out there necessarily, except in an outreach sense. There's so many great teachers out there. I remember years and years and years ago, back in the day where you had to subscribe and you'd get a tape or you'd get a CD. I remember years and years and years ago, someone coming up to me and they had the very first iPod. And they were listening to something, and I always like ask people when they have headphones in, I was like, what are you listening to? Because I'm hoping it's music, and we can talk about music, because I love music, and it opens doors to relationship. And he's like, oh, I'm listening to my favorite pastor. And in my mind, I'm thinking, is that John Meyer? Is that, you know, thinking through, rolling through our pastors at the time. And he named some famous preacher, I'm not going to name right now. And I was like, oh, he's your favorite pastor. That's cool. Well, why is he your favorite pastor? He had went through all these things with his theology and his eloquence and his illustrations and how powerful his teaching was and so on and so forth. And I said, so what does that mean? Is he like your pastor? He's like, yeah, I really actually do consider him my pastor. I was like, so does he know your name? Does he know what you struggle with? Does he know your family situation? Does he know the situation in our city? Is he involved in shepherding your life in any way at all? And he said, well, no. I said, well, then he's not your pastor. He's just a teacher out there that you're ingesting content from. But he's not your pastor. There's a difference. He said, well, I'm following him. That's great. You might want to go move there and actually be under his leadership so that he can actually be your pastor. You know, it's just how I could go on a rant about this, because we've experienced so much of this over the last 15 years as more and more information gets piped into people's ears and into people's minds. And, you know, I don't hear that I'm against that. I personally listen to a lot of different teachers from a lot of different perspectives, and I would encourage all of you guys to do that. We need all that input. We really do need it. But when it comes down to it, the messages from the people that know us and the people in our circle that know our city and our neighborhoods and our lives and our families, those are the ones that really truly matter that we need to pay attention to. And I think that's one of the things that Paul is getting to. But above that, on a higher level than that, he's saying, you know what? All of this is insufficient. Even your pastor standing on a stage physically in front of you, he's just a man. Don't say, I follow Travis, I follow John, I follow Aaron, I follow Perry. Say, I follow Jesus Christ. I follow Jesus Christ. Were any of us crucified for you? No, Jesus Christ was crucified for you. And when we start looking to Jesus and we start following Jesus and his headship and his leadership and his message and his way of life, and we start walking in the way of the cross, and we fully start comprehending just how much he saved us from, and that permeates our lives, and the mercy and the grace and the love of God becomes so apparent. We start walking in that, we start erasing some of those differences between us. And we start showing grace to one another instead of condemnation for various choices or directions that we're facing. Turn with me to John chapter 17. So back in 1 Corinthians verse 13, Paul asks the question, is Christ divided? I think that's a really profound question that he's asking. So context in John 17, this is Jesus' prayer. And Jesus has been on this planet as a human being about 33 years at this point. This is the end of his ministry. This is one of his last things that he did officially before he went to the cross. And Jesus took some time to go and pray. And he got with his father, and he prayed some very specific things for this little ragtag group of guys that were called his disciples, that were going to go forth, as we read in the book of Acts, and go throughout the world and travel and win converts. And he prayed some very specific things. One of the main things that he prayed here is one of the very last things that he prayed that should elevate its importance to all of us. As we think about who we're following, what we think, what we're willing to separate over. Let's see, where should we start here? So why don't we just... Why don't we start in verse 13, where Jesus says, he's speaking to his Father, he's praying, he says, but now I'm coming to you. These things I speak in the world, that they may have my joy fulfilled in themselves. I have given them your word. The world has hated them. He's talking about his disciples. These are his followers. He says, I've given them your word. The world has hated them. There's a opposition that they're experiencing from the world. And it's because they're not of the world, just as I am not of the world. But then he says in verse 15, he says, I don't ask that you take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one. I think about this. We're in the world. Jesus prescribed that we stay here. But he's praying for protection for us. Specific protection from the evil one. It's saying that if they become of the world and the evil one gets his grips on them, there's going to be bad stuff that happens. So when a Christian starts really paying attention to the world and not recognizing I'm from somewhere else, I'm not of this world, just as Jesus wasn't of this world, there's high likelihood that something bad is going to happen. And one of the very first things that happens in churches when that starts happening is division. And I get that from a couple verses later here. So he says, I don't ask that you keep take them out of the world. Verse 16, they're not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them in the truth. Your word is truth. Meaning, there are a lot of truths out there. I have heard podcast after podcast over the last just 2 months on the secular side of things where people are questioning how will we ever know, with the state of technology as it is today, what is actually true. You can put a face on a video and have that face say something it never actually said, and it looks real. You can publish that on YouTube as if it was fact. You can make someone say something they never would have said. You can publish it as fact and completely ruin someone's life in an instant. Or you can completely transform someone's belief about something in an instant. And one of the downstream effects of that is our whole culture right now is wallowing in this just vast sea of uncertainty where all of these messages are coming at them with absolute and utter certainty. As if they were fact, as if they were truth. We should not be deceived. We should not be wallowing in fear in this moment, because Jesus, way back in John 17, foretold this. Sanctify them in the truth. What is truth? Your word is truth. This is what is truth. Everything else is suspect. This is truth. Immerse yourself in this. Be sanctified by this word. Every word in this book, live by this. Not the YouTube influencer. Live by this. Do not elevate any other wisdom above this. That's what Jesus is saying. They will be sanctified. They will be marked as distinct from the rest of this world because of the truth. He says it right there, your word, God, is truth. Verse 18, as you sent me into the world, so I have sent them into the world. He's saying this is a dangerous prospect. As God sent Jesus into the world to die, Jesus' people are being sent into the world to potentially give up their own lives. He says, for their sake, I consecrate myself that they may also be sanctified. Again, here it is, in truth. And here's where he includes us. Verse 20, I love this. Jesus, he's so solid and so well-rounded. He's thinking about the future. And he says, I do not ask for these only, meaning his current circle of 12 disciples and maybe the loose association with there's 70 more and then 120. There's some people following him at this point. But he's not asking these things for them only, he says, but also for those who will believe in me through their word. That's us. Today. That's us sitting in this room. That's us. He's included us in this prayer. We know this prayer is specifically for us because of that. And here is the clincher. Verse 21, that they may all be one, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they may also be in us. Jesus' prayer for us to not be divided. Jesus' prayer for us to be one. How does this practically play out for us? Does it mean we all like the exact same music? No, it does not. Does it mean we all like exactly the same preaching style? No, it does not. Does it mean we all have a same favorite color? Which, by the way, mine is black. Everybody tells me that's not a color. In my opinion, if a shirt can be black, it's a color. Just is. I like red too. Red's a good color too, but it's not my favorite. It doesn't mean full conformity of thought. What it means is that we're sanctified by this truth together, and we're unified in it. And we're not splintered saying, I follow Paul, I follow Apollos, I follow this particular branch of systematic theology that I've studied in depth. I follow Jesus Christ, who died on a cross when I didn't deserve it. When I was his enemy, God loved me so very much, I didn't deserve it at all. In fact, I deserved death itself. I have nothing of merit in me that warrants anything good. Jesus Christ did everything for me. And this truth here says that he became my sin so that I could become his righteousness and inherit eternal life. And I want to be one-minded with every single one of you on that fact. And I do not want to separate over trivial things like politics and mask wearing. I'm not saying they're not important to discuss. They're absolutely important to discuss. But Jesus asked us to be one. And the representation of that, Paul said, don't follow Paul, don't follow Apollos, don't follow Cephas, follow Jesus, because Jesus was crucified for you. The representation for that, pay attention to what he says there. There's multiple truths in here. There's the one that says, I want them to be one. That's what Jesus says about us. And then he says, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they may be in us. So they're basically saying the unity that exists within the Godhead between Father, Son, and Spirit is the type of unity that we are to aspire to amongst each other as we live together in community. And it doesn't mean we can't correct one another. In our passage in Acts, Priscilla and Aquila pull Apollos aside and they say, actually, here's the truth. And they open his eyes to understand it more fully so he can be more effective in his ministry. They didn't look at him as a threat and say, oh, because he's so eloquent, we got to do away with him. I said, let's just help you understand just a little bit more. There's plenty of room for that in our lives. And then we can go on and we can contend in the synagogue or wherever else our modern representation of that is for the truth. But it's this truth. It's this truth. Not the best health secret that our influencer is peddling on Instagram. That could potentially be very divisive. It just simply could be. He's saying, as the Godhead, the Trinity, Father, Son, and Spirit are one, unified, they're one in mission, one in purpose, one in love, there's so much love between each other. That's how we're to be. And we're supposed to be in that with God. And then here's the third thing in that. So first of all, we're supposed to be one. Second, it's as God himself is one. That's our example. We're supposed to be inspired by that and attain, you know, we won't ever get there perfectly until we're there with him fully in unity. But that's what the church is supposed to look like. Finally, I love this. We're one as God is one, so that. It's verse 21, the last part. So that the world may believe that you have sent me. You know, when I think about the Christian witness in America and the public examples of division, the public examples of Christians behaving badly for the sake of a cause that's not advocated in here, whatever direction that might end up being, we have so much potential for that in our world right now, because I could go home and turn on my webcam and become an influencer for something. Eventually, there's going to be so many, it's just so watered down, nobody knows anything about what to believe. It's just kind of where we're at right now, that critical mass. But when Christians are so split, and I think this is what Paul is getting at in 1 Corinthians with this example of, I follow Paul, I follow Apollos, I follow Cephas. No, follow Christ. If we could be unified in that, if we can be examples of that in a world where division is normal, where opposition is normal, where people can cancel one another for thinking a certain thing, in an instant, someone can be just shut off. And if we're examples of not doing that and actually sticking together and being for one another and gracious with one another, and loving one another above and beyond, that is a scarce commodity in today's world. I think truth is a scarce commodity in today's world, and unity. You know, I watched the inauguration. I watched the presidential address. I watched Biden say over and over and over again, our platform is for unity. And you can think whatever you think about that. I'll just go on record to say I didn't vote for him. Can I say that from the stage? But I appreciated that message. Though I disagree with the policies, I appreciated that message. I appreciate that message because it's the message that Jesus preached to us. Now, there's no president that's going to unite a whole bunch of really messed up, unredeemed people. It's just not going to happen. We can't expect that. But I think Jesus is saying, hey, church, you can actually be united and not divided. You can actually be in a position of Apollos and maybe be an influencer and have someone come and correct you and say, oh, yeah, you're right. I can be gracious and I can learn and I can be humble. You could be in the position of Priscilla and Aquila, traveling from place to place and preaching the word. And as long as you're grounded and sanctified in this, Jesus says you're going to be separate from the world. The world will come in opposition to you, but he's going to be for you. And when that happens, church, and when the church is unified, when we're one as Jesus prayed for us to be above anything else he could have prayed at this point, I pray that they would have all the right thinking. I pray that they would all be good moral people. I pray that they would establish a good godly country. I pray that, he could have prayed so many things that he didn't pray. He prayed, let them be one as we are one so that the world may see. And the whole point of Apollos preaching eloquently was to win converts. When the world sees united people who love one another, who are merciful, who are gracious, who are holding the line on the things that this prescribes for us to do, the things that describe who God is, and we're unified on that, and we're strong in that, it says the world will see God. The world will see God. So as we who are people who are called by Jesus to share the gospel, people who are called to do what Apollos was doing so eloquently, to contend for the faith, to go out into the world, as Jesus said here in John 17, I'm sending them into the world, sanctify them with the truth. Jesus said, Great Commission, multiple places in the New Testament, all the way up into Acts 1:8. Jesus said, you will be my witnesses. You will go out. I will fill you with my spirit, and you will go out, and you will share, and you will make disciples. People will be won over. He says, when we're one, when we're unified, that's when we're effective at that. And so I think for this year, for 2021, as we come off of one of the most challenging seasons, I think, for most of us that we've ever experienced, and we see a world divided, we see a country divided, and we see Christians divided, and we have friends posting things on social media, and we are tempted to make a comment. I'm not saying don't make the comment, but make that comment in unity and love and grace, centered around what Jesus did for you and what he's bought you into and the person he's made you into as a follower of him. Let's not be divided.